Good morning, everybody. This morning's text continues last week's conversation on the nature of faith. Last week's reading offered a definition of what faith is. As the letter to the Hebrews continues, it now lifts up those with deep faith and considers them among the great cloud of witnesses. Reading from the letter to the Hebrews, chapter 11, 29 through 12, 2. By faith, the people passed through the Red Sea as if it were dry land. But when the Egyptians attempted to do so, they were drowned. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell after they had been encircled for 7 days. By faith, Rahab, the prostitute, did not perish with those who were disobedient, because she had received the spies in peace. And what more should I say? For time would fail me to tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, of David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, obtained promises, shut the mouths of lions, quenched raging fire, escaped the edge of the sword, won strength out of weakness, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight. Women received their dead by resurrection. Others were tortured, refusing to accept release in order to obtain a better resurrection. Others suffered mocking and flogging and even chains and imprisonment. They were stoned to death. They were sawn in two. They were killed by the sword. They went about in skins of sheep and goats, destitute, persecuted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and mountains and in caves and holes in the ground. Yet all these, though they were commended for their faith, did not receive what was promised, since God had provided something better, so that they would not, without us, be made perfect. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and the sin that clings so closely. And let us run with perseverance the race that is set before us. Looking to Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith, who for the sake of joy was set before him and endured the cross, disregarding its shame, and has taken his seat at the right hand of the throne of God. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Thanks be to God.
O Holy One, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be ever and always acceptable unto you. For you are our rock and our redeemer, our Alpha and our Omega, our beginning and our end, source of our love and a wellspring of our joys. Amen. You arrive at the door and you see a big red stop sign. And below the stop sign are a list of instructions requiring you to don a gown, a mask, and some rubber gloves before entering. And in this era of superbugs, before we enter hospital rooms, we're increasingly being required to wear these kind of things, gowns and masks and gloves. We, of course, don't want to pass on any kind of bugs and things like that and to weakened immune systems and all that kind of challenges in this day. I visit many of the saints in our congregation when they are going through some challenges in their health in hospitals, wearing a gown and a mask, gloves. And I sometimes wonder when I'm behind this whole mask and everything, what gets through? What are the unintended consequences of us kind of holding ourselves back in such a way? Now, certainly we don't want to pass on any germs and worsen the health of the person. But I also wonder about what gets through. What gets through this sort of seemingly sterile barrier that is between myself and the person? I know you probably, along with myself, when we go to hospitals, we see some of the health professionals, the doctors and the nurses that have those wonderful personalities that come through in their attire. They don't just wear the sort of the boring kind of green hospital scrubs, but they wear the ones with character. They have ones that have smiling faces on them, or sunsets or rainbows or something like that. They have some character. And they don't just bring their professional expertise. When I see that, it also feels like they're bringing their personality. They're bringing their warmth, they're bringing their love, and they're bringing their character through. That's what is kind of being passed on. This morning, talking about faith and the nature of how faith has a contagious component to it. Faith is contagious in a good way. Faith is passed on from people to others. Faith is shared among communities. Right? Faith is shared from God to God's people. Now, just to back up a little bit, last week, and you may wish to pick this up in the gathering area or on the website if you'd like to hear it, we began our conversation about faith looking at Hebrews 11 as our conversation partner. We talked about three components of what faith is. We started to begin working with an operating definition of what faith is. And we talked about three different things that faith might be. Hebrews 11 talks about, now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things to come. And those three things that we kind of took out of that text was a real deep sense of confidence and conviction, a deep sense that God's grace, God's kingdom will come in God's time. There is an assurance in our faith knowing that will come in time. The second part we talked about was a partnership with God, that with faith we are allowed to partner with God, that our efforts, our lives, partner with God and allow God's kingdom to continue to unfold through us, not because of us, but in partnership with us. Finally, we talked about vision. Faith grants us a unique vision, a little bit of a Christ vision, if you will, a little bit more depth to see the compassion, the needs, the world, the way Christ sees it. So today we move on from what faith is, as we've been considering that this past week about what faith is, now to how faith is passed on, how faith is received. The text that Gwen read for us this morning teaches us that faith has a contagious nature. Faith catches on. It's like those bugs and those germs in the hospitals that we worry about passing on. Faith in a good way is something that can be passed on. Faith can be and should be contagious. Faith can be passed on from a person to another. And faith can be passed on from God, all of God's people. Let's talk a little bit about the first part, about how faith is passed between people. The text recounts some amazing stories. Some amazing stories of God's people of faith, heroes of the faith, if you will. I mean, an even bigger title, some of the cloud of witnesses of the past. Israel's liberation from Egypt. Remember, it recounts the story of Moses, that great story of liberation, where Moses leads them out of slavery, leading them through the Red Sea as if it were dry, leading them towards the promised land, giving them that next way that they might live truly in the heart of God. And this text continues with all the many other people of faith. And what we learn is that these stories of faith are lifted up to inspire followers. They're not there just to pass on the story. They're there to pass on the faith, the living faith that would be the next generations and the next in ours as we hear them today. We learn that as faith is passed on, it's contagious. It lives in you and I. Lives of those faithful of the past, their light, their hope, their justice, their peace, we continue to receive that from the faithful and live it into the future. I wonder, as we think about this initially, I wonder who you would lift up. Person of faith from the past. Person of faith that caused your faith to catch on fire. Who are, if I can use the term, the saints in your life? Who are the saints that caused your faith to live and root and grow? Now that word, saints, is kind of a churchy word, but I would suggest that it's something that we should reclaim today. Because saints are not just like saints of the past that the Roman Catholic Church has beatified and really lifted up those amazing people of the past like St. Teresa or St. Francis. We go into Scripture, the Apostle Paul talks about the saints being the believers, the people of the church, the fellowship of the church, you, saints. We are the saints, ones who live and follow in the way of Christ. Saints are the ones who inspire the faith of others. So I wonder, who are the saints of Northwood? Who are the saints of the past that you might lift up? The saints of the present right here today? Who would be the saints in your community? The saints in your family? Saints in your neighborhood? Saints in the world today? Whose deep faith, their deep faith, contagiously infected you and caused your life to change and grow? Faith. Now, a further question that comes from that challenging side concerns your faith and how your faith might be touching the lives of others. It's kind of like that Simon Says exercise we did earlier with the children. As we know, many people around us follow and watch what we do. They take our lives as a guide theirs. Have you ever considered how your faith may be touching the lives of others? There's a wonderful quote, and I'm sorry, I can't find the original author for this, but you may have heard this one too. Your life may be the only Bible others read. Your life may be the only Bible others read. Truth in that, isn't there? Tremendous challenge in that sense of living out our lives faithfully because others are affected by it. It touches them and it lights their lives, lights their faith on fire as well. This is truly the challenging part of the gospel, isn't it? How our lives affect the lives of others. We honor and we celebrate the saints of the past and the saints around us, but we also realize the need of the saints, the present and the future. There's a job description out there. There's a job requirement for all of us, a job posting, saints needed. Why now? Now, if that job posting might seem too large or too daunting, fear not. I would like to suggest that we, each and every one of us, are all qualified. We are all qualified to be the saints of the present and the future. Now, in the text, the example of the faithful, all of those people that we read about in that text, the great cloud of witnesses, which is such a daunting title for them, each and every one of them are not perfect. They are just like us. Let's look at some of them and just kind of remember some of their stories. Moses. Well, we realize that this amazing liberator, this one that we lift up with such amazing person of faith. Well, remember when we examine his story that, well, Moses wasn't perfect. He wasn't even sure at the very beginning of his own ability to liberate the people. He had many long conversations with God, didn't he? Some of the other people, many of us don't even really remember their stories. They're not regularly lifted up, are they? But let's look at some of their stories as well. Some of the warriors that are lifted up. Gideon. Gideon's a warrior, but if we were to look at his story in Judges, he is reluctant about his very ability, and he requires proof from God that he'll win before even going into battle. Barak. Barak is not confident about his abilities either, and he says to God, I'm not even going into battle without Deborah. And he knows going into battle that victory will be granted, and the reason for that victory will be given to Deborah and not him. Samson, the one with the great superhuman strength that we remember, we also remember as we read his story that he is far from bright, and he dies while making his point. Jephthah, another warrior, he trades his life, he trades the life of a child, his only child, for the victory of a military battle. And David, sometimes thought of the ideal king of Israel. Well, we remember that David, of course, is the one that committed adultery and arranged for the murder of Bathsheba's husband in order that he might take her as another wife. What I'm getting at is that these people that are lifted up as the great cloud of witnesses, just like us, are far from perfect. They are not perfect, yet they are the ones that allowed the faith to continue through the generations. Like us, deep faith continues to spread through our imperfectly human lives. The light, the hope, and the justice from our lives is allowed to flow to others through the ones that allow themselves to be the saints in the world. Saints are wanted. Why now? The second piece in this consideration, if you might want to think about applying, and another reason that I think we are all uniquely qualified, is that from the stories and the sharing that I've had with each and every one of you, we all fully participate in this race we call life. We participate fully in the ups and the downs of this race we call life. The text calls it a race. It says, let us run with perseverance the race that is set before us. And what the letter is talking about here, the writer to the Hebrews, is not necessarily a race like a long marathon that we might think about, where there is one winner who is given the gold medallion and the rest are second, third, and therefore. But the race is talking about something very different. The Greek word for race is agona. Of course, you can think of where we get the word agony. Race is all about agony. Race is all about the whole ups and downs, the whole complexity of that thing. Race is about the journey of life. It needs to be lived fully, needs to be lived through the ups and through the downs and all the in-betweens. That is the nature of a fully well-lived life. The text continues, let us run with perseverance the race that is set before us. And it says, looking to Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. Part of living a faith-filled life as a saint is about living through the suffering and the pains just like Jesus modeled for all of us. Living a full, deep life that is filled with the joys and the wonders and the beauty, but also that includes the challenges and the pains that are experienced as well. Faith-filled life, full life, will always contain the suffering and the sadness and the pain. You cannot ever avoid it, can we? And this kind of sets life in context, doesn't it? This gives life in context because we realize that faith allows for the future and the present. Faith allows for it to continue to unfold. One of the great preachers of our day, this is Harry Everson Fosdick, and I love reading some of his older sermons. And he said in one sermon, he said, there's two ways to get rid of Jesus. First way is obvious, is by crucifying Jesus. The second way to get rid of Jesus is to worship him without following. That's a tremendous truth, isn't it? There's a tremendous truth in that because it's so easy to just come to worship on Sunday, but then not live our faith the other 6.5 days of the week. That is the true challenge. It's easy to be a member. It's easy to be a part of a church, part of a faith community. We just show up. Woody Allen once said, half of life is just showing up. The other half engaging fully in all the depths of life, in all the joys and all the challenges and suffering. That's truly where life, where faith is lived out. Although there's a challenge. There's a challenge today. The world really encouraged us to avoid pain, to avoid suffering, to avoid the real stuff of life more often than not, doesn't it? It seems like that is the real push that our world encourages us to do. But yet we know in our hearts that truly the suffering and the sacrifice are part of a full, authentic part of life. And if we do live through the ups and the downs in our life, don't we think, doesn't that really make the finish all the more truly worthwhile? Doesn't that really allow for faith to truly be lived out? I'm noticing that a lot of the music that the millennials, that my children are listening to today, really a lot of it is encouraging them to embrace challenges, to embrace the suffering, embrace the pain. My son loves rap music today. And a lot of that rap music is really about the suffering, the challenges, the pain that they are truly living in as late teens and early 20 kids. Daughter is a band from California called Vampire Weekend. She loves. And there's this one song that truly lifts up, I think, in many ways, the importance of us all, young people and older, for us all to engage in the fullness of life. The song in the refrain is called This Life. Talks about not cheating on giving up, not cheating on the life that is there for us. It goes like this, I won't sing it. You've been cheating on me, cheating on you, and cheating on me. You've been cheating through this life. You've been cheating through all of this suffering. Oh Christ, am I good for nothing? There is a deep need in the world, a deep need for the contagious, infectious nature of faith to be lived, to be seized by you, to be seized by myself in the way that we live and engage in the fullness of life, to engage in the fullness of the joys and the fullness of the pain, to live it out and to allow that faith to emanate into the world. May we give thanks to the saints of the past that have lived their faith and inspired us. May we receive this invitation to be the saints of the future. Amen.